We'll end the others in the bathroom, Anna said softly, following his gaze. They seem nice.
Then why are you so afraid of us?
That part he couldn't figure out. If she was a shifter groupie, she'd be more brazen. Instead, she was clutching her drink and sitting at the opposite edge of her bar stool.
Because you're a bear shifter.
And you're scared of shifters?
She nodded. He stared at her for a long time. She was beautiful, smart, and shy, and obviously terrified to be this close to him, so why was she talking to him in the first place?
Is this some sort of dare or bet? He asked, scanning the room.
Kong lifted his beer in the corner from a table he sat at with his Lowlander crew, but other than that, no one was watching them that he could tell.
Are your friends taking pictures or something? I don't do social media, and I'm rarely on the internet, so that shit won't hurt me.
I'd never hurt you,
she said on a rushed breath. He jerked his gaze back to her. Truth. Every word she just uttered had been laced with honesty.
Who the fuck was this girl?
And why wasn't his bear a snarling mess inside of him like he was every other minute of his life? He set the beer bottle down and backed off the stool.
Why would you want to talk to me? And don't give me the handsome line. I know what I am, and I know what I ain't. Mixed up, bloodletting berserker at the mercy of my alpha's patience. You're too good to be sitting next to some crazy lumberjack grizzly shifter.
Anna was clutching her purse now, and as she slid off her chair, she looked like she was going to cry.
Human women are like that, soft and full of tears.
She was little and helpless like he used to be, and now his protective instincts were kicking in for a woman he couldn't afford to get attached to. She wasn't a grayback, would never be a grayback because all the boys were mated, except you. Easton took a step back. His bear had the right of it, afraid and quiet around this dangerous little creature. Easton spun to escape Sammy's bar, to escape Anna. But Willa stood in his way, a pissed-off little hellion. She blasted her fists on her hips. Ask her to dance.
What? No.
Willa's usually happy brown eyes narrowed to dangerous little slits.
Yes, she's soft, Easton. Yet somehow, she found the courage to come over here and talk to your scary ass. I like her. If you hurt her feelings, I'll break your fucking leg.
He made an angry, clicking sound behind his teeth.
You already broke my leg.
And he had the permanent limp to prove it. Willa's eyebrows wrenched upward.
You have two legs. I can play that game twice.
He growled at her and turned around.
Do you want to dance? He muttered to Anna, his words gravelly.
Anna's pretty blue eyes had somehow gotten even bigger. They took stock of half of her fucking adorable face now.
I think so.
Great.
Easton grabbed her hand and tried not to crush her fingers and break all of her bones as he led her to the empty dance floor. This was the part where Creed, Matt, and Jason usually fought their mates. Empty dance floors with one couple drew too much attention, but Easton gave exactly zero fucks who watched him. Beeston was his name, and Town Crazy was his game, and he'd accepted the stares a long time ago. Gia had picked a slow song, and with a frustrated snarl in his throat, he turned around and pulled Anna's hand to his shoulder, then held her other one out to his side, and swayed back and forth. Anna was holding her breath, and had gone pale as a sheet, and now he wanted to kill whatever was upsetting her, but unfortunately, the only danger to her was him. His head was so mixed up. He shook it hard and tried to focus on not touching her too hard. She would turn to ashes and blow away in a stiff wind if he did.
Breathe, he demanded.
She inhaled deeply as a tremble shook her shoulders.
I'm not going to hurt you. I won't, so you don't have to be scared.
Her hands were miniature against his, and for the first time when he straightened to his full height, he got the chance to see how tiny she was next to him. It was almost laughable. He had a foot on her, and 100 pounds of muscle, at least. She squeezed his hand, and he drew up short. Wait, he was touching her.
What's wrong?
She asked low, her eyes so big and vulnerable. She gave away every emotion with him. He'd stopped dancing, so he picked it up again, side to side, as he held Anna as gently as a dried sand dollar. She cleared her throat and looked around.
Everyone was staring, but he didn't care. Anna, however, seemed to wither under the attention.
You dance very well, she whispered.
Does that surprise you?
Yes, I thought a man like you would step on my toes and lose his rhythm, but you're quite good.
His face stretched into a quick smile, there and gone at her compliment. Handsome, and a good dancer. And Anna the Mystery was giving him all the compliments a man like him never thought he'd hear. He would reward her kindness with an explanation. My mom taught me to dance.
Surprise flitted across her face, and her full lips molded into a smile that stole his breath from his chest. I didn't know that.
What a strange thing to say. Of course she didn't know that. She didn't know him. I was 7. She taught me in our living room and told me, to make a fine man someday, you need to learn to dance with a woman. To hold her proper and gentle, as a real man ought. That part had been meant for Dad, who sat at the table and glared at their lesson. Mom loved to dance to an old record player in the living room. Dad never had danced with Mom that Easton had seen.
She was lovely. I mean, she sounds lovely.
Anna's breath shook harder as she stepped closer to him and rested her cheek as light as a paintbrush stroke against his chest. She would hear it now. Anna would hear how hard his heart was beating just being this close to her. He should pull away, hide. But when he looked at the exit, Willa was standing in front of it with her finger jammed at him, shaking her head. Fuck. At least Anna hadn't asked what happened to Mom. He liked the tiny human more for it. She wasn't digging too deep, as he'd seen the other shifter groupies try to do when the Borlanders were at Sammy's trying to get their dicks stroked. So many questions. Anna didn't do that, though. Anna was nice and gentle. Why was his bear still so quiet? Where did you learn to dance? He asked, just to distract her from his heartbeat battering her face right now.
Not for my parents. When we moved to Rapid City, I went to public school for the first time. There was a school dance, and I was so nervous. I'd been homeschooled all my life, and there were so many kids, it was intimidating.
Her voice shook on every word, but it was getting stronger.
A boy in my class asked me to dance. It was very stiff and scary, but he showed me what to do. And afterward, I felt accomplished and brave.
He didn't like thinking about her dancing with anyone else, which was stupid and territorial, and he had no right to get possessive over her. Anna wasn't his. Still, he rested his chin on her head so she wouldn't see him curl up his lip in a snarl for the boy who had asked her to dance. Something strange was happening. Anna stopped shaking, and she went all warm and soft in his arms. She stepped even closer, pressing her body flush against his. Vanilla. Her hair was silk against the rasp of his beard. Such a contrast to him. Good Anna. Bad Beeston. Another song came on, another slow one. Gia was controlling the jukebox now and threw a middle finger at one of Kong's lowlanders for complaining. Was Willa crying? No, couldn't be. Just a trick of the lights playing with his eyes. Anna felt so good against him, but now that she was so close, she'd feel how excited he was. How could she not? His dick was hard as a rock between them. I have a boner. Perfect. That would set the mood, idiot.
For me?
Anna asked. Was that hope in her voice? She looked up with those ensnaring eyes. Goddamn, she felt good pressed up against his dick like this. That was supposed to scare you away.
It doesn't. I like that you say what you mean.
He liked that about her, too. Honest notes in all her words. And shit, she felt good. 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 Anna. His Anna. He wanted her under him. On top of him. Fuck. I have to go, he murmured. A deep frown hurt his face. He didn't want to leave her. But she was fragile as a dry leaf, and he wasn't the beast for her. Quiet bear, where are you? The lights were too bright in here.
Okay,
she said, disappointment pooling in her big blue eyes. His guts hurt. He'd done that, disappointed her. But it was best this way, leaving now. He would only disappoint her more if she knew how fucked up he really was. Bowing,
He kissed her hand like Mom had taught him. Then he strode for the door and past Willa, whose sad eyes matched Anna's.
Don't look back.
He blasted through the door and out into the dusty gravel parking lot. He turned and glared at the door as it swung closed behind him. A long growl rattled his chest, and there he was, the beast in his middle. Every step Easton took away from the bar hurt, but he forced himself to walk to Jason's truck and drop the tailgate. He sat on it and looked at the stars. If he was lucky, the others would be headed out here now to go back to the Greyland Mobile Park with him.
Did I make you angry? Anna asked from behind him.
Easton jumped. Shit, how had she snuck up on him? She was shaking again, badly. This made no damn sense. Anna was obviously terrified around him, yet she kept approaching him.
You make me feel like a monster. It had been meant to hurt her, and his words did. That much was obvious by her face falling. More gutting him, more ache. She shouldn't have this kind of power over him. No one should. She was going to draw out his bear.
But his inner grizzly had stopped snarling again.
You're not a monster?
Anna said low as she stepped carefully over a pothole in the gravel. And if you ever say that around me again, I won't talk to you anymore. As the brave little human dragged her gaze back to his, she looked angry, smelled angry. Vanilla and fury.
You're good.
I'm not.
She eased closer and rested her hands light as feathers on his knees.
You are.
Her tone had turned to grit and steel. Easton froze under her touch. Anna was fragile, and he would hurt her if he moved. Settling in between his legs, she cupped her face gently with her palms. She searched his eyes and smiled.
I like dancing with you. And when we talk, I get butterflies in my stomach.
I make you sick?
No,
she said through a laugh. He liked the sound. Soft and feminine, her giggle tinkled like a bell.
I mean, you make me have flutters in my stomach, because I like the way you make me feel.
You're pretty.
He cleared his throat and swallowed hard. He could do that part better.
I think you're the prettiest girl I've ever seen.
There, better. That felt right. She smiled again and stroked her thumbs across his cheeks.
I always wondered what it would be like to have you say that to me.
Easton gripped her wrists and shook his head, confused.
I don't understand you.
Anna stood on her tiptoes and rubbed her cheek softly against his. Silk against the rasp of his scruff. More proof of how different they were. He was a jagged river rock, and she was the gentle water. Now it was Anna who was steady as Easton's heart raced and his breath shook. She was so close, so warm, touching him. Him. He wasn't a stupid man, and he knew he would never see Anna again. But for tonight, for right now, he was going to enjoy a woman pretending he was something more than a monster. His breath came in shallow pants now as the corner of her lips brushed his. Closing his eyes, he threaded his fingers through her soft hair and gripped gently. Don't go. The next time she eased back to brush her cheek against his, he pressed his lips to hers as gently as a delicate woman like Anna deserved. His bear pushed for more, harder, faster, taster. But Easton forced his hands and lips to be easy. Easton had told her he wouldn't hurt her, and he wouldn't. Not now. Not ever. He stifled the urgent growl in his throat so he wouldn't scare her. Anna angled her face and sucked gently on his lips. Fuck. He wanted more, needed it. He nipped softly at her mouth, grazing her with his teeth, and she let off a quiet moan that did disastrous things to his middle. Burning. Fire. Dick so hard. He just wanted a taste. A small one. Just one. As her lips moved against his, he touched the closed seam of her mouth with his tongue. A request, not a demand, because Anna was good, and she should make the decision whether to let a beast like him in. Her lips parted, and he brushed his tongue against hers. Fuck, he was being too rough with her hair. He dropped his hands down to her waist and dragged her closer, pressed her against his erection because she felt right and warm between his legs. He kissed her harder. Not his fault, his bear's fault. The animal was in his head, pushing to be closer to Anna now. She slid her arms over his shoulders and tightened around his neck, pulling him nearer. Don't hurt her, Bear. Be gentle. Fragile, delicate Anna. He was an avalanche, and she was a hummingbird. Courageous little creature. Sexy. She rolled her hips against his, and he gritted his teeth, pulling away from their kiss as he rested his forehead against hers. Anna, he warned her shakily. She was undoing him. I like it when you call me that. She hesitated, then kissed him once more, a soft peck that plucked at his lips. With a smile, she backed away. Your crew is waiting to leave. Easton dragged his gaze away from her, and over his shoulder, the graybacks were coming out of the bar. Anna headed toward a white car.
Don't go.
She unlocked it, then slid in behind the wheel. When the engine roared to life, she rolled down the window. Goodbye, Easton. He knew it was coming, the words that would rip his insides out. I'll see you tomorrow, Easton, she said with a shy smile and pink cheeks. Stunned, he stood from the tailgate and watched her drive away. Anna had made him feel almost normal tonight, but that wasn't the only gift she'd given him. She'd given him his first kiss. Chapter 7 Easton sat on the back porch of his trailer and watched the progress of the sun as it sank down behind the mountains. He fingered the strand of frayed black silk ribbon he'd taken from the Raven's treasure box this morning before work on the landing. The day had been hard, as his focus had drifted this way and that, between thoughts of Anna and the meaning of the black ribbon that he tucked deep inside his pocket. It served as a reminder. Anna was frail, like Mom had been. She wouldn't survive a man like him, so it was best that her words, I'll see you tomorrow, Easton, had been nothing more than a pretty lie. She didn't even know where he lived. He pulled the length of ribbon through his fingers, a Raven's sympathy. Where has he gone off to? Mom asked, hands on her hips as she squinted against the setting sun that threw the front yard into the golds and oranges of autumn. Easton had just hit his first grisly growth spurt and was almost as tall as his human mother now. He shrugged and pressed his hand against her belly where the undulating was at the strongest. It was a boy, a little brother. He just knew it. Maybe he fell asleep somewhere. Mom inhaled deeply. She was tired lately and had trouble moving around. Her feet swelled at night and she was short of breath, but Dad didn't let her ease up on the chores, not this close to winter. Next year? Can I go to school with other kids? He asked. He wouldn't dare mention it to Dad. He already knew that answer. Dad would say, Boy, you know what you are. You got a bear inside of you, and humans can't be trusted with that kind of information. We stay out here in the woods for survival. Get that cockamamie idea out of your head. School. And then he'd spit in the grass, because he always did that when Easton asked a dumb question. He spat on the ground the same as he used a period at the end of a sentence. Discussion closed. Mom was softer, though. She understood how lonely it was out here. She smiled sadly down at him and squeezed his shoulder. Things were going to be different, Easton. I had plans for you and me, but the baby derailed him. Maybe someday, but not now. Plans? Troubled, Easton looked out over the yard again as his senses picked up something that lifted the fine hairs on the back of his neck. Something was wrong in their woods. Dad, he called, stepping off the porch. Movement stirred the dry grass in the brush just beyond the tree line. Easton trotted forward at the sound of a pained groan, and Mom followed as she was able. Dad appeared from behind the trees, stumbling and slow. Easton couldn't understand what he was seeing, though. Dad's head was crooked on his shoulders. Oh, my God, Mom whispered in horror. Easton, don't look. She covered Easton's face with her hands and yanked him to a stop. I said, don't look. Mom was sobbing now. Go back into the house, she screamed as she ran for Dad. Dad fell to his knees, body convulsing as he toppled over sideways. Easton approached slowly, horrified as Mom cried over him. His neck had been snapped. No. Russ, Mom cried, what can I do? Can I reset it? No, Dad wheezed. I don't understand. How did this happen? No, it'll be okay.
I'll fix it. Easton, get back in the house. Don't look.
Maybe Dad had fallen out of a tree or over a ravine. His shifter healing had worked, but froze his broken neck at the wrong angle. Some injuries were too bad for even shifters to survive. All his life, Dad had taught him not to get careless with his healing. Easton heaved breath as Mom wept and positioned herself above his body. She was going to re-break his neck.
Mom, Easton said, voice thick. He shook his head. It won't work.
May, Dad choked out.
What is it, Rats? What is it?
May, I'm sorry. A long, last breath escaped his lips, and his eyes rolled closed.
No,
Mom screamed. She pulled hard on Dad's head, but breaking a neck wasn't so easy. Not for weak humans.
Don't leave me here. Don't leave me.
Mom's agony tore at his own burning heart. Dad. Easton dropped to his knees in shock at how broken he looked. How grotesque he looked in death with his bulging neck. He'd come back to say goodbye. Tears streamed down his face as he buried his head against Dad's stomach. He was still warm and smelled of life. Dad, he murmured, gripping his clothes and dampening his shirt with tears. The raven fluttered and flapped in the branches above, but he couldn't pull himself away from Dad's body. He and Mom sat like that for a long time, crying against him until he grew cold and stiff. Easton had never heard someone break before, but he knew what was happening to Mom was awful. Mom shook his body.
I was going to take him and leave, and he wouldn't let me. He can control his bear now. We could have made it. And you ripped that away from me. And now you've left me. You've left us here in this hell you created. You can't.
She clenched his shirt in her fists.
You can't, Russell. Do you hear me? Easton will be all alone.
All alone? So many tears. Mom's face leaked on and on, long after Easton had run dry. He eased away, lay against a felled tree, and watched Mom cry. The evening shadows had turned to darkness as the sun sank behind the mountains. The light from the cabin was the only thing that lit the clearing. Not even the moon was full enough to lend them adequate light. Mom stood up, muttering strings of words that didn't make any sense at all. They meant nothing. Maybe they weren't even words at all. Mom didn't see him anymore. She stood and began gathering wood. Her eyes had gone empty, and her tears had dried on her cheeks. She couldn't see as well in the dark as him, yet she found wood as though she had the forest memorized. Silently, he helped her. He was small yet, only 8, but Mom was pregnant and heartbroken, and whatever she was doing right now, he could lighten her load. Alongside her, he dragged wood into the clearing in front of their cabin until the early hours of the morning. She didn't answer him when he asked questions, so he gave up trying. And when the first streaks of pink brushed the horizon, Mom asked him to help her drag Dad's body to the pile of wood, and then she lit a match and watched him burn. Easton buried his face against Mom's side and clutched her dirty dress, unable to watch the fire consume his dad.
Why? He asked.
Mom inhaled deeply and asked, Easton? As if she'd only just noticed him clutching onto her.
Why are we burning him?
Because, my boy, your daddy would haunt these woods for always. You and I see the ghosts, Easton. We'll burn his belongings and put salt around the house next. That's what you do, Easton. Can you remember that?
Yes, ma'am, he said on a choked breath. He could smell Dad burning.
Repeat it for me.
Burn the bones. Burn the belongings. Salt.
That's a good boy. Her voice sounded strange, dreamy as she watched the flames.
You'll need to do the same thing for my body.
Don't say that.
Promise me, Easton. Don't let me haunt you.
And that's when he felt it. Mom's belly was pulled up tight, like a drum. Easton gritted his teeth against the pain in his middle. He could still smell the smoke from the funeral pyre. The ribbon had done that. The raven's trinkets held magic in them. She'd left it on the windowsill for him to find when he'd gone back to the house with Mom. It was the raven's way of telling him she was sorry for his loss, though how a young crow understood so much was beyond him. Maybe she'd been his spirit animal. If he hadn't held her gift in his hand now, he could have convinced himself she hadn't existed at all.
Chapter 8. Maybe this was what a panic attack felt like. Aviana gripped the wheel and tried to stop panting. Keep it up and she was going to pass out. Shit, she couldn't do this. She thought of Easton's kiss last night and shook her head to rattle out the weak thoughts. Yes, she could, because Easton had been gentle with her. He wasn't all weapons and darkness. He was good in his middle, just like he always had been. Last night, she'd seen the spark of the boy she'd fallen in love with. Easton was hers. By the time she pulled under the Greyland Mobile Park sign, however, she was back to full-blown panic mode. Today, she was going to put herself further out there than she ever had in her entire life. She was going to declare what she needed to make her life into the one she wanted. Unfortunately, that life had somehow grown to include a crew of bear shifters, her biggest natural fear. From early childhood, she'd been told how volatile and murderous the apex predator shifters were. They weren't like her people, who were scavenger shifters, politely preying on already deceased things. Bears killed what they wanted and didn't give second thoughts to carcasses. Great risk brought the possibility of great reward, though, and Easton was worth it. He really was. Deep breath, chest out, back straight, smile, bigger. Let's do this. The Greybacks sat around a communal fire pit in front of a semicircle of trailers. They wore light jackets to ward off the cool March night and sat in brightly colored plastic chairs. Easton wasn't here. Well, good. This would be easier without him watching because she wasn't here to see Easton right now. She was here to talk to his alpha, Creed. The Greybacks had gone quiet by the time she stumbled out of her car. Hi, she said, much more high-pitched than she'd intended as she flapped her hand in a wave. Ha, pay up, Grizz, Willa said, pointing to Matt. Matt rolled his eyes and handed Willa a wadded-up $5 bill from his pocket. Okay. A yipping attack dog, the size of a soccer ball, charged Aviana and bounced around her feet, barking. It was brown and white, and someone had shaved a mohawk down the entire length of his back and head. She would have been more intimidated if he didn't lick her ankles between barks. Peanut butter spy, get down, Gia commanded. Aviana stepped gingerly around the yapper and opened the back door, then struggled under the weight of a massive box of beer cans. She hefted it toward the Greybacks, breathing heavily as she stumbled forward, trying not to step on the tiny dog circling her feet. She set the gift on the ledge of the brick fire pit. I did research on lumberjacks, and the internet said you were hairy, wore flannel, belched a lot, and drank lots of beer. Willa grabbed her stomach and cackled. What site were you looking on? The first one that came up on the results. Good God, she wished she could lift her gaze from the ground right now. Anyway, I brought you this. She pushed the box forward, but it only moved by an inch. Silly, weak bird arms. Peanut Butter Spike probably could have moved it more. I like her, Jason said, ripping into the side and pulling a blue can out. How did you find out where we live? Creed asked, his eyes narrowed in suspicion. It said it on Jason's social media pages. Had it? She couldn't remember. She'd known they lived here because she flew over it every day, but they didn't need to know that she was a quiet observer to their lives. Dude, Matt said, leveling Jason with a glare. Like, you can talk? You were the king of oversharing before you deleted all your pages. Piss off, man. It's not like I ever thought anyone would be able to actually find a trailer park. We're out in the wilderness. I assumed GPS would laugh at anyone who tried to get up the back roads in these mountains. Creed was glaring at him with a tired, not amused expression. Jason shrugged. Fine, I'll take any mention of our address off my pages. Creed swung his attention to Aviana, who was feeling mighty guilty for outing Jason to save herself right about now. What are you doing here? Aviana lifted her chin and
and tried to hold his gaze, but failed. Fuck it all, just spit it out then. I'm here to ask you for Easton.
Jason choked on his beer and spewed it into a fine mist in the air. What do you mean, ask for Easton? Creed asked over the coughing. She inhaled deeply and said,
I'm here to ask your permission to court Easton.
Explain. Aviana held onto the side of the waist-high, bricked-in fire pit to steady her wobbly legs and swallowed hard.
I want to date him with the intention of becoming his mate.
That's not how we do things here. Mates are chosen freely.
Creed looked her up and down as his nostrils flared.
You smell like terror. I know Easton. I don't think you are it for him. He isn't made for a mate. I'm sorry, but the answer is no.
I'll piss off, Creed, Willa muttered. She pitched her voice up and yelled, Easton!
Willa, Creed warned,
as second I veto your bullshittery. She likes him, she brought us beer, and she won me $5.
Willa cocked her head, and her eyebrows jacked up.
Winner, winner, werebear dinner.
Second, Willa. Second. Not Alpha. I'm Alpha, and I say she isn't going to be safe around Easton. I'm all for Easton finding someone, but she's human, and he's, well, Beaston.
He hasn't killed Gia yet,
Willa argued, pointing to Creed's mate. Creed looked at Gia in disbelief. I'm not the bad guy in this. I'm trying to save her life.
He won't hurt me, Aviana murmured.
She would ignore the slice under her arm that was just now scabbing over. Baby, Gia said, rubbing Creed's arm.
I know you mean well, but Aviana is asking your permission to court him out of respect. It's not really up to you.
She nodded to the man limping toward them from the tree line.
It's up to him.
Creed scrubbed his hands down his face and muttered, fuck. As he approached, Easton's eyes reflected eerily in the glow from the fire in the brick pit, proof that his animal was never far from the surface. His gray shirt clung to his hard physique, and the top two buttons were open, exposing the line between his pec muscles. His legs were long and powerful with every stride he took, and despite the limp, he was graceful. He'd learned that gait with his time in the wilderness, fending for himself. She'd watched the slow change from clumsy boy to graceful animal in the years that broke him.
Hi,
she whispered past her tightening vocal cords. He shifted his weight from foot to foot, just on the edge of the firelight. Even in his human form, he looked like a wild animal who found safety in the shadows. You're here.
For a reason, Willa said.
Easton frowned and ghosted a glance at the red-headed woman, then back to Aviana. Why? Aviana looked to Creed. He was king here, and she was wary of him snapping if she didn't behave right. Go ahead, the Alpha said in a defeated tone, leaning back in his chair and resting his hand on the swell of his mate's stomach.
I want to court you.
Easton shrugged a shoulder up to his ear and shook his head. I don't know what that means.
I want to date you, and if you find you like me well enough.
She swallowed the lump in her throat, but the rest of the words wouldn't come out. Not with him staring at her so directly like this. If I like you well enough, what?
Maybe don't look at me while I tell you.
All right, he said, sounding baffled. He turned around and gave her his back. She exhaled a long, shaky breath.
Maybe if you like me well enough, you'll pick me for a mate.
Easton's back went rigid. With each silent second that dragged on, the anticipation clogged her throat, making it harder and harder to breathe. She opened her mouth to apologize for intruding and excuse herself, but Easton murmured, You're scared of me.
I'll work on not being scared of you.
Then okay.
Okay?
Her voice came out a hopeful squeak. Easton, I forbid you to turn her, Creed said, powerful voice sending electric currents into the air. Easton looked to Willa over his shoulder and shook his head. I learned my lesson. I won't turn Anna. He spun slowly on his heel and looked at Aviana over the firelight. I won't be any good at this. There was warning in his tone, but his eyes softened.
but we can try. Alpha, I want your blessing.
He turned his inhuman, green gaze on Creed. Please.
A muscle twitched in Creed's clenched jaw. With a sigh, he leveled Iviana with a glare.
Before you answer the question I'm about to ask you, know that we can all hear a lie.
Steeling herself, Iviana nodded.
Why do you want to be with Easton?
That question held the easiest answer in the world.
Because I don't fit anywhere else.
Softly, Willa murmured. She sounds like a grayback to me. A slow smile spread across Creed's face in the flickering firelight.
Then the courtship between you and Easton has my blessing.
A giggle bubbled up her throat, and she sagged heavily against the brick as Easton stood frozen across the fire, looking stunned.
Willa stood and reached her first, then hugged her so hard her lungs hurt.
Gia and Georgia followed, and the boys smiled and nodded at her as she walked around the fire pit toward Easton. Her Easton.
I won't hurt you, he said, promise in his voice.
She stood on her tiptoes and hugged his neck, inhaling the wild scent of his skin. Fur and earth and pine.
I know you won't. I trust you.
His hand slipped around her waist slowly, gently, as if he were forcing himself to be careful with her.
When you get to know me, you'll leave.
She eased back and smiled up at him, trying her best to hold his feral gaze. She pressed her palm against his chest. Her hand rattled with the soft vibration of his pounding heart.
I already know you.
Confusion rippled over his face like a wave, there and gone in a moment.
Do you want to see my den?
I want to see your den, Jason piped up.
No,
Easton gritted out.
How do you like that? He asked Georgia. I'm his best friend, and he still won't let me see the inside of his trailer.
Nobody's seen it, Matt said. Hey, he called as Aviana and Easton walked toward the tree line. I'll give you $5 to tell us what it looks like inside.
Aviana shook her head and ignored the banter that kicked up near the fire pit.
Don't worry, she said softly. I won't tell anyone anything you don't want me to.
Easton didn't say anything back, only slipped his big, strong, calloused hand against hers and squeezed gently. That was a reward in itself, so she bumped his shoulder and snuggled her cheek against his taut arm. A sign of devotion from a raven. But he didn't need to know about her animal side, not yet. Not until she figured out a way to break it to him gently. Easton refusing to share his home with his crew was proof he was a keeper of secrets. Her instincts said he would be upset if he knew she'd witnessed the years that had shattered him. No, before she exposed her hidden, feathered self, she had to make sure he wouldn't run away from what they could be. By the time they walked up the trail to a single wide, the one with a chipped white siding and stacks of firewood down one whole side, she wasn't shaking so badly anymore. She did, however, feel as if she'd been dumped into a surreal moment that could very well be a dream. She was here. With him. With the one she'd thought so much about and forsaken her people for. With the one who'd kept her trinkets after all these years. I'm sorry, he murmured as he pushed his door open, though she couldn't tell what he was apologizing for. She stepped up the stairs and into his den as he flipped the light switch on. The smell of pine sap hit her senses first as she took in the small space of the living room. There was only one lamp in the corner, and he'd thrown a square of orange fabric over it to mute the light. The walls were covered from floor to ceiling with tree bark. She gasped as it hit her why this place felt so familiar. She spun and stuck her head back out the front door, but she already knew what she would find. A workshop built at a similar distance from the tree Easton had built a house in when he was a cub. This place was his version of the home he'd lived in all those years ago. He'd recreated the place he felt the safest. A wash of mixed emotions filled her. Sadness that those years had etched their way so deeply into his adult life. Disappointment that he was still holding on to the past. Pride that he'd survived it all. Tears blurred her vision as she smiled up at him. He was waiting, dark eyebrows furrowed with worry.
I love it,
she whispered thickly.
The tension melted from his shoulders, and he huffed a relieved sigh. A crooked smile took his lips, almost deep enough to expose one of his dimples, but not quite. He showed her the small kitchen and single bedroom, which took up half the length of the trailer, and was curiously normal after the tree-like living room. A queen-size bed boasted crisp white sheets under a folded-down comforter that looked as soft as a cloud. His bathroom was just as tidy, a habit he must have picked up in his adult years, because the boy she remembered had been scattered and his living space cluttered. She brushed her fingers across the plush comforter, familiarizing herself with his place. There was a bookshelf along the wall, three shelves high and made of oak. The top shelf was filled with childbirth books. She pulled one out and looked questioningly at him. Creed got Gia with a baby. With a frown, he sat on the bed behind her. My mom didn't survive a baby. I wanted to make sure Gia would be okay. Aviana's heart dropped to the floor. Of course he would be worried after what happened. Easton's mouth ticked as he pulled at the edges of the frayed black ribbon she'd gifted him the night his father died. She swallowed the gasp and froze into place so she wouldn't attract his attention before she could get the shock wiped off her face. Where had he pulled that from? I like Gia. I was mad at Creed for putting her at risk, but she loves her baby. She wants it. Even though Gia's human, she isn't weak, and her baby girl is strong, too. He lifted his gaze to hers. She'll be dragon-blooded, you know.
Dragon-blooded? Aviana asked, leaning back against the dresser. That sounded terrifying.
Creed is the grandson of the last immortal dragon. He turned out grisly, and maybe his daughter will, too. Or maybe not. Gia promised to have the baby in a hospital. Registered shifters can do that now. It's not like when I was growing up. We had to hide our young.
She knew all about that. It had been the same for raven shifters. Until they were old enough to control their changes, it was safest to live away from society, off the grid somewhere. It was still like that for growing families. Ravens weren't out to the public like other shifters, and likely never would be. Ravens were naturally more cautious than bears. I'm sorry about your mom. Her voice quivered with emotion. Oh, how she'd wanted to say those words to him. But she'd only been able to bring him gifts and hope he interpreted her sympathy. He pulled the black ribbon through his fingers and gave her that ghost of a smile.
Don't be. It was a long time ago. I was a cub at the time. I barely even remember what she looks like.
His voice sounded odd, though, hollow, and she'd bet her flight feathers he remembered everything in great detail. His mind had always been like that, sharp as a blade, retaining everything he learned. It's how he survived out there in those harsh woods alone at such a young age. He would try something until he figured out how it worked. And then he never made the same mistakes twice. His mind was a steel trap, just like the one...
Aviana closed her eyes against the vision of Easton screaming.
Not now. Later, when she was alone. She couldn't feed that memory now, while he watched her with those bright eyes that missed nothing.
You're hungry.
Easton stood so fast he blurred, and she gasped at his speed.
Easton held his hands out.
Sorry, he whispered. I think you're being gentle around me. He nodded. Is it in your nature to be gentle?
He shook his head slowly.
Then I think maybe you should be yourself and allow me to adjust.
But you always smell scared. I don't like it.
If I get used to you, then I won't be such a chicken anymore, and I have a feeling I'll like your real self even better anyway.
His eyebrows jacked up. I assure you, you won't.
Aviana snorted and laughed. How do you know? His eyes dipped to her lips as they stretched into a bigger smile.
Because I'm pretty damn sure no one on this planet can handle all of my personality.
But now a smile was spreading across his face, and there they were, those dimples she wished with all of her heart to see. Before she could change her mind, she stepped forward and pressed her finger against one. She'd seen them 100 times in his youth, but had never revealed herself as a human and couldn't touch the tiny indentations as a bird. He inhaled a sharp breath as his pupils contracted to pinpoints, and zeroed in on her.
What are you doing?
I like to touch you, and I like when you smile big enough for me to see these. She moved out of the way of a dresser and looked at his reflection in the mirror with him. Your smile is my favorite thing about you.
Are you broken, Anna?
The question caught her off guard, and she had to wait a moment before answering, just to steady her thoughts. Not broken, no.
Then why did you ask for me? Why did you come to my alpha for me? Why in the hell would you want to be mated to a man like me?
Because my life doesn't feel hollow when I'm around you, she said honestly.
He huffed a humorless laugh and looked down at the ribbon between his fingertips. You make no sense.
I wasn't happy.
Happy is just a word, Anna. It doesn't really exist. It's a state of mind people convince themselves they have, so they can get through their existence one day at a time. You search for happiness, and when you think you find it, you work your whole life to hang on to this feeling as thin as air, and then you die. Happy is a bullshit word.
Shocked, she sank down to the bed beside him. She'd never heard him string so many words together. He'd never been vocal about his opinions when he was younger, and now it was clear how jaded he'd become. He was wrong, though. Well, then, I'll make you happy and prove you wrong.
She stuck her tongue out at him and grinned. Easton cocked his head and stared at her smile again. It seemed to attract his attention easily. Whatever your reasons, he murmured, I'm glad you found me.
Chapter 9. Easton's focus was dragged to Anna's lips for the 100th time. She smiled the more comfortable around him she became. She didn't smell like fear anymore, just vanilla. What was it about her lips? Right now, she was sitting beside him on the living room couch, talking about her first job. She'd waited tables at some diner where she'd lived, and she had lots of funny stories about the people she'd worked with. Her lips looked like art as they formed each word. Or maybe it was the kiss from last night he kept thinking about, the feel of her lips against his. He'd never once had the urge to kiss the other girls in the graybacks, but around Anna, it was all they could think about. Focus. She's looking. She'll think you're weird like everyone else does. Keep her.
So, what do you do for fun?
What do you do? He countered, not because he was avoiding the question, but because he was suddenly excruciatingly curious about what filled up her quiet hours. Anna scrunched up her nose.
Don't laugh.
I won't.
Pinky promise? She lifted her pinky in the air. Hook your pinky onto mine and say, I, pinky promise, not to laugh.
He did as she asked, and reveled in the feel of her. So much so that he didn't let go of her finger after he recited the oath. He just sank farther back into the couch cushion beside her, with their pinkies hooked. She put her legs over his lap, as if they'd known each other for always. He smiled at how fucking cute she was.
I like to knit.
Like old ladies do? Hats and socks and blankets?
No, you're smiling, Easton. Don't let that get out of hand.
She waited for him to wipe his amusement off his face before she continued.
I knit clothes for animals. Turtle sweaters with spikes on the back, and dog costumes for Halloween. I even made a dress for a guinea pig wedding once. People send me special requests online, and I make them.
Easton waited for the laugh to die in his throat before he asked, And they pay you money for these costumes?
Anna lifted her chin proudly. Yes. I never told Caden about that stuff because I knew he would think it stupid and beneath me, and he would ask me to give it up.
Caden was your last mate. His bear rattled a long growl inside of him.
Anna let go of his pinky and pressed her palm against his chest. Not my choice. He was a smart pairing, but I didn't care for him.
I would like to see a dress for a guinea pig.
Anna dropped her gaze to her hand, but it didn't hide her smile. Maybe happiness did exist.
Anna looked happy now.
Now your turn. Tell me what you like to do.
No one had ever asked him this before, so he took his time answering. I like to chop wood.
Why?
Because it makes me feel like my bear isn't going to rip out of my skin.
The smile fell from Anna's face. Does it feel like that often?
He nodded. Best she knew what she was in for. All the time.
Every minute?
He nodded. Except it's not so bad when I'm around you, or chopping firewood.
What do you do with the wood?
I could take care of you. She propped a pair of throw pillows under her head and relaxed against the couch, her legs still draped over him. She was wearing jean shorts, so he rested his hand on her smooth legs. Did you shave your legs? He asked.
Mm-hmm.
Did you shave your legs for me? In case I touched you here? When he ran his fingertip up her shin, she shivered.
Yes,
she said on a breath. Her face had gone all serious, and her pupils dilated, making the blue in her eyes look darker.
Now stop distracting me. What did you mean about taking care of me? I don't want money, Easton. I just want you.
A cord of lumber goes for $250 to $300 come wintertime around here. I chop all spring and summer, and sell in the fall after the first snow.
Sell to who?
Until Jason came along. I sold to backwoodsmen. People who didn't care I was a little off. People who needed firewood because they hadn't chopped enough for themselves because they were too old or sick, or they couldn't find enough dead trees. They have to be dead a long time, so the heavy green middles dry out and turn white. Those are the ones that burn the best. I can charge more if I split it for them and deliver it to their cabins.
I thought you worked up in the mountains as a lumberjack.
That's one of my jobs. I have three. My animal does best if I stay busy. He's still wild as shit, but a busy mind makes him manageable. Kinda.
Jason helps you now?
He's my friend. We went in as partners this past fall. I had a lot of wood to unload. We needed to sell closer to town, and I can't talk to people. I can't. Jason's good. He talks. I chop.
I like Jason. It's a good business you two are doing.
He stroked his finger up and down her leg, watching the chills that washed up her soft skin in waves. Logging is seasonal, so we all work different jobs during fire season.
What else do you like to do?
Kiss you. He tossed her a sideways glance and slid out from under her legs. If he kissed her here in his den, where she was spreading around her sexy scent, pheromones and vanilla, he would want more. Anna was fragile. Anna couldn't bed a man like him. Easton stood and held out his hand, palm up. Do you want to see what else I like to do? Her lips parted slightly, and she blinked slowly as she slid her palm against his and nodded. He liked that he had such an effect on her. She smelled so fucking good he wanted to bury his face between her legs, but he wouldn't. He liked Anna. He wanted to keep her, not scare her. She was wearing a thin, soft black blouse, and the goose flesh he'd conjured so easily on her legs bothered him, so he pulled his heavy canvas jacket off the coat rack by the front door. He draped it over her shoulders before he let her out the front door. It was lined with wool and would keep her warm. He gave a private smile when he heard her sniff the jacket. Little human knew how to use some of her senses, at least.
Easton?
Anna asked. Her voice sounded odd as she tugged his hand. The porch light illuminated her troubled eyes, so he drew up closer. Perhaps she was still cold, or hungry, or thirsty, or tired, or sick. She didn't smell sick. He didn't really know how to take care of humans.
I want to tell you something.
Anna searched his eyes as she snuggled deeper into his jacket. Okay. This sounded bad. He was always ready for bad, though. She didn't answer for a long time. Instead, some of the fear smell came back, and she couldn't hold his gaze anymore. At last, she smiled faintly and whispered,
"Thank you for the jacket."
That wasn't what she'd meant to say. It wouldn't have been so hard for her to thank him. He forgot manners all the time, but Anna wasn't like him. She was socialized or civilized. But there were a million things he wasn't ready to tell her too, so he wouldn't push. That wouldn't be fair. It's okay if you have secrets. Her big blue eyes were rimming with tears. She nodded slowly as her chin quivered from where she was trying to keep her emotions bottled up.
Soft and full of tears, he murmured, as he thumbed away the first drop that fell from her eye to her cheek. Do you have secrets, Easton?
Infinite secrets. More secrets than stars in the sky.
If you ever want to tell me, I'll help you keep them.
Easton made a ticking sound behind his teeth and eased away from her. Danger. Scritch, scratch. Secrets and memories were the same. They belonged to the dark. He was strong enough to hold them, but Anna was too fragile to shoulder his broken pieces. He would spare her the pain because he liked her. He was the avalanche, and she the hummingbird, and the only real gift he could give her was to not crash down upon her and crush her into oblivion. "Come," he murmured, pulling her toward his workshop. This place was as sacred as his den, but he wanted to share everything with Anna. It was as much of himself as he could show her. "Wait here." He didn't want her tripping over the workbench in the middle, or any of his tools he might have left lying about. When he pulled the string to the single light bulb that hung from the ceiling, it illuminated the entire shop. Easy to do, since it wasn't very big. He could have built it much bigger, but this was the size of the workshop Dad had used. In a shop just this size, Easton had learned to be a knife maker. He watched with a ready smile, as her eyes drifted over the tools hung on the wall, and the workbench with the trio of wooden handles held together with clamps, ready for staining. She looked at the bowl of discarded blades he kept telling himself he would salvage someday because steel like that deserved a home in a fine leather sheath. He would write his mistakes, bad cuts and notches, weak spots in the steel, and experimental decorative edges gone wrong. She patted over the sawdust floor and touched the finished hilt of a knife that was ready for a sheath.
"Easton," she whispered, "these are beautiful."
Sure, he knew they were fine knives, but hearing Anna compliment his work filled him with pride. Slowly, so he wouldn't startle her, he squared up behind her and reached around her. Gently, he took the knife from her hands and set it on the table. Brushing his lips against her neck just to taste the skin there, he picked up the sharp awl he used for engraving. "E plus A," he carved neatly into the hilt. Girls like things that matched, and now she would have one just like Willa, Gia, and Georgia. "This is yours. My first gift to you. The first of many if he didn't scare her away." Anna sniffled and leaned back against him. She nuzzled her cheek against his once. Affectionate little creature. She liked to do that. Soft skin against his raspy whiskers. He smiled and slid the knife into one of the sheaths that had been hanging up to dry. The snap of the button clasp was loud in the silence of his workshop, but now it was safe for her to handle with a razor-sharp blade tucked away. Anna turned in his arms, and her eyes swam with such adoration it nearly buckled his knees. No one had ever looked at him like this, like he was everything. "I'm going to kiss you," he warned. She slipped her arms around his neck and leaned up.
"Good."
He tried to stay gentle, he really did. But when Anna bit his lip and gripped the back of his hair, he lost control over his animal fast. He lifted her onto the workbench and dug his fingers into her hips in desperation to keep himself in check. A growl rattled his throat as she nipped him again.
"Careful, woman."
A whiff of fear, and then nothing but arousal again, and it was plain as day Anna was finding her bravery with him. He smiled against her lips and plunged his tongue into her mouth. He dragged her forward across the table, until her legs wrapped around him and her sex pressed against his raging erection. With a soft moan, Anna rolled her hips against his, and he just about lost it. Heaving breath, he trailed kisses down her neck to try and steady himself. His eyes would scare her if she saw them right now, so when she tried to pull his gaze to hers, he closed his eyes and angled his face away from her.
"What's wrong?"
she asked, hugging him tightly. "I want you," he gritted out. Wanted to be buried inside of her, but she deserved better.
"You can have me. I've waited so long for this."
She rested her palm on his cheek and pulled his gaze back to hers again. Honesty pooled in her deep blue eyes when she whispered,
"I'm yours."
"Won't risk putting a baby in you."
"You can't. I'm on the pill."
Easton grazed her shoulder with his teeth, then kissed it gently. "I don't know what that means."
"I'm on medicine. That means you can't get me pregnant."
"Well, shit, that was sorcery right there." "It's too soon." Anna huffed a mysterious laugh.
"It's really, really not."
"You're fragile, and I'll hurt you." Why the fuck was he arguing? One of Anna's delicate eyebrows arched high.
"You won't impale me, Easton. Just make love to me gently."
"Gently," he repeated. That word sounded impossible right now. General won't work in here. If I take you on my workbench, I'll fuck you like a running animal. He pulled her off the table and whipped her around.